No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello, happy Father's Day, and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. Over the past several weeks, we've had many interesting guests, and we've discussed many issues that are in the headlines, like border security, civil rights, and education. But today, we want to talk about what's important to you. So we're going to open up the phone lines, and we want you to call in and tell us what you care about. This is your chance to express your opinion and discuss the issues with an elected official. So call in and let's talk. But before we get started, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez. Hi, Kathleen. And as always, thanks for helping get the conversation started.
I'm glad to be here, Senator. Hello, everyone. I'm Kathleen Gomez. I am speaking to you from the great state of Arizona on the Mexican border. And before I go on, I just wanted to remind everyone that what the phone number is here. It's 888-429-5471. And we're going to start the conversation today on a subject that I find very intriguing and something we all should start really kind of thinking more about, and that's corruption in politics. And, Senator, I know that recently you had a D.C. councilman plead guilty to bribery, and that this is the third member of your city council to be charged and plead to a crime in the past 18 months. In addition, your mayor is under federal investigation, and two other councilmen have been accused of wrongdoing. I mean, what's going on there in D.C.?
I don't know, but when you say it like that, I feel like I should move. I mean, this is absolutely true. We've had all this and more. And most recently, we had a councilman who, by the way, his name is Michael Brown, and I want to make sure that everybody understands that's a different person from me. He's been charged with taking a $55,000 bribe from FBI agents to use his influence in a city government. Now, to get these people special treatment, get a fictitious business that they put together, special treatment. This man has also had over $100,000 missing from his campaign funds from the last election. And luckily, he was up for re-election and lost in November and ran in a special election in April, but the FBI sting came through in March, so the federal prosecutor told him that they wouldn't consider a plea deal unless he dropped out of the campaign, which he did. He faced up to 15 years in prison for what he'd done. And it looks like they're going to settle on $35,000 in restitution and 3 years in jail. But he's providing evidence on other corrupt officials in the District of Columbia, and so they haven't sentenced him yet. Our mayor is under investigation for taking $650,000, for having $650,000 used under the table in his election that wasn't reported. Several of his campaign workers have already pled guilty. And we've had two other council members, as you mentioned, one who stole $353,000 from basically the Washington Little League sports youth programs, and the other one who was chairman of the council and lied on federal loan applications and had over $100,000 missing from his campaign account.
Now, which one was the one that had the big cars or something? And they have like escalators.
Well, that was the chairman of the city council who pled guilty to lying on loan applications. And on the first day of his office, he ordered a Lincoln Navigator, which I don't know how much it cost, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. Yeah. And it came in and it had the wrong color interior. So they ordered him a different one with another color interior. They paid $800 just to have a guy drive it from Detroit so it could be there on inauguration day. Then after all that, they found out that he wasn't even entitled to have a car.
Jeez. Now, and I want to tell the audience, because I know you and I talked a lot about whether we should have this conversation on the radio about corruption, because, you know, D.C. has been known to be very corrupt, and I come from a town, Douglas, that is very corrupt. In fact, you know, the first rural tunnel that occurred was in Douglas. And that came from across line and on land that I don't know if he was a judge or the chief of, I think he was a judge at the point. And, you know, and he claimed that, you know, oh, I didn't know anything about it. It's a warehouse. You got a truck. I mean, it's a small town. What the heck? You know about it. And then also I remember when George Magazine named, remember that was John F. Kennedy's magazine.
Yeah.
And named Douglas as the top 10 corrupt places in the United States. So we had talked about this, whether or not it was something we should do. And we figured, yes, we should do. And why not? Because you and I have always been honest to the point where that's probably why we don't have an office or we're not in power or we don't have a lot of money, because we've never taken the easy way out by having power absolutely corrupt us. We could have. We know many people that we worked with that have gone that route. But you and I have always stayed true to doing what is right and not what is wrong. And, you know, we haven't benefited from being honest, I think, unfortunately. But I do want people to understand that Michael Brown is Michael A. Brown. You are Michael D. Brown. And I will say that Michael A. Brown is an African-American. And, you know, I worked on your campaign out there in D.C. And I told you I was horrified because of the things that was said and the way you were portrayed. If it had been reversed, you know, if we had done that to these people's campaigns, we would have been actually probably hung by the rafters because we would have been called racist. So I know you don't feel comfortable saying that. I worked on your campaign. Sometimes it just is so, you know, it's really difficult because you wonder how is it fair in this world when you see so much corruption and so few people. I mean, there's very few people who are willing to take it on. And I want to read you a quote. I found this very interesting. It said, "The fight for justice against corruption is never easy. It never has been and never will be. It exacts a toll on ourselves, our families, our friends, and especially our children. In the end, I believe, as in my case, the price we pay is well worth holding on to our dignity." And you know who that was said by? Frank Serpico. You remember Frank Serpico,
yeah,
right?
The guy who took on New York.
That's right. Yeah. He took on the whole New York police for its corruption.
Yeah. Well, first, let me tell you that I'm shocked because I did think you had a lot of money, and that's why I'm your friend. So this is bad for me, you know. But no. But in all seriousness, this is a particularly sad moment for you and I because we know Michael Brown. We worked with his father. Michael Brown's father was Ron Brown, who Kathleen and I both worked with on staff and both worked for as chairman of the Democratic National Committee. He was a fine man. He worked hard. Bill Clinton would have never been president of the United States without him. And that's not my opinion. That's actually Bill Clinton's opinion. And he was killed tragically with other people that Kathleen and I knew and worked with in a plane crash when he was Secretary of Commerce. So it's
Actually, it's interesting, too, because he was killed in Croatia when they were going over there during that whole thing. And, you know, my ex-husband is Croatian, so it was all kind of, it's amazing how it was all intertwined. And he was a very good guy, and a guy that no matter where you are, he could have been in a crowded room with diplomats and kings and queens, but if he saw you, he made the time to come over and say hello. He knew your name. He remembered when he worked with you. Didn't matter how small of a job you did, if you were the mail clerk or if you emptied the trash, this guy knew and remembered you and respected you and made you feel like you were somebody of importance to him. And I'll never forget that, because that's such a rare quality in today's, you know, political scene.
Well, you know, and that's really what I think sustains people like you and me. When you say that we've been honest and we've always done the right thing, I think it sustains us that we know there are other people out there that are the same. And Ron Brown was certainly one of those people. We've worked with a lot of people. You know, it's funny that an old friend of mine, actually an old friend of Kathleen's and mine, a guy named Mike Caberline from Kansas.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a name you haven't heard in a while. When he left the DNC, he left a note on my desk. It was from one of those calendars that had a saying for each day. And it said, "Don't forget that the cream always rises to the top, but so does the scum." So, you know, I've found that to be true in politics, that some of the finest people, my co-host included, that I've ever met, I've met through politics, and some of the worst people that I've ever met, I've met through politics. And unfortunately, I think that, you know, the quote that you have from Serpico is very true. And the answer is that, you know, that it does take a lot out of us. And that's because the good news and the bad news about democracy is the same news, that it represents the people. And unfortunately, we have a society that very often promotes corrupt people. And you know, because we listen to people that tell us what we want to hear rather than what the truth is. And somebody stands up and, you know, you and I, Kathleen, both worked on the Dukakis campaign. And we all remember when Mike Dukakis said, "I'm going to have to raise taxes." Well, nobody wanted to hear that. The guy that got elected in his place raised taxes. But people don't want to hear that you're going to raise taxes. They want you to tell them that you're not going to raise taxes.
Well, it's interesting. I'm sorry to interrupt, but on that vein that you were talking about, I was reading something about George Bush, you know, and when George Bush was campaigning, he talked about, and this was, I think, the father who said this, you know, that there would be no loss of wetlands. So when he got into office, of course, there was a whole loss of it. You know, they did not fulfill his campaign promise. So somebody had asked, I don't know if it was the press secretary, you know, well, how come he made this campaign promise and he didn't live up to it? And they quoted saying he was reading a speech. He didn't say that he was going to not have a loss of wetlands. He was reading the speech that was given to him on the campaign. Meaning, you know, this is what you do in campaigns. You say what everyone wants to hear, but it's not necessarily what you are going to do, because it's not what you wrote. Because now we have gotten to the point with what you say on a campaign, well, you can't really believe, and everyone kind of understands that it's just a campaign promise. And that's the shame of what we've become in allowing these campaign promises to be an excuse. You know, he said it on the campaign, he didn't really mean it. And that's acceptable to us. And so it's really the people's fault for the corruption. And you and I have talked about this. You know, whether everyone complains, oh, everyone in D.C. is corrupt, they all have their own agenda. Well, I come back from after being in D.C. for 10 years, in New York for another 20, and I come back to this small town, and I have never seen so much corruption and lies and slander than when I was involved in my father's campaign as mayor. I mean, there was a day, and I remember growing up this way, Michael, maybe, I know you did too, where if you were going to say something about someone, you better be damn sure you had your facts right. Because to say a lie, they could prove it in court, that was slander. So you couldn't say anything about anyone unless you had proof to back it up. Now it has completely changed. Now you can go out there and say whatever you want, and you don't have to have the proof. In fact, it's up to the person who you're slandering to prove that you're wrong. And I learned that real quick living in this town in Douglas. It is very corrupt. It does not have the interest of its people at its heart. And I've just, and remember, I know I've called you, and you told, I think you thought I was being over dramatic, you know, you're like, oh, that couldn't be true. Nothing like that happens. And I've been shocked too, because the things that I've seen, I just thought didn't happen in a democracy. But democracy is that way, like you were saying. It's good news and bad news, and it's what we allow to happen.
Well, you know, certainly we're seeing that in Washington, too. And it's funny, like the thing you said about the having the tunnel from Mexico and the guy didn't know it was on his property. Well, they always say that. Michael Brown took $55,000 in a hotel room from FBI agents, and he said he thought it was a loan. I mean...
In a hotel room, right? That's the way loans are done.
Right. You don't sign any loan papers. You just go to a hotel room, you know. And I'm from Newark, New Jersey. If you're getting your loan in a hotel room, let me tell you, you're going to be paying that interest for the rest of your life to some guy named Luca. Who hangs out on the corner. That's not how legitimate loans are. But it's never these guys' fault. You know, they always put it off. And it's true. It's bothered me for years, for example, that conservatives say, it's your tax money. You deserve it. It should come back to you. It shouldn't be used by the federal government, because that makes sense to people. But the truth of the matter is, local government is a lot more corrupt than the federal government, because it's easier to corrupt it at the local level. It's easier to give contracts to your friends. That's what's going on in Washington right now. And part of our problem, as crazy as it may sound, is that we really are run by the federal government. So our local press and the people that are supposed to keep an eye on the local politicians really don't focus on them in Washington, D.C. They focus on the national politicians at the national level. So there's a lot of shenanigans that go on in D.C. that shouldn't go on just because nobody's paying attention. They're giving contracts to their friends. And you know, the guy that's behind all this corruption, supposedly, who's put $650,000 of his own money under the table into the mayoral contest, and he had a $353 million contract with the city. Well, I can tell you, from somebody that ran a business for 25 years, I'll give you $650,000 any day of the week if you give me a $353 million a year contract. And that's the problem. And it's all very chummy. It's not like they meet, you know, in some sleazy place and they all plan this out. It's just like, oh, you know, let me help you. Don't forget me. You help me. But in the end, it's our democracy that suffers.
And you know, I'll have to say, I feel that I should say what the name is of this. It was a judge, Judge Bahrain, who owned this land, and he's been well known to be behind a lot of things that happened in this town, him and his brother. And it's interesting, because right before the show, I had made a comment on one of these Facebook things. This guy takes lots of pictures of Douglas, and had a picture of one of these brothers, and everyone was saying, oh, well, you know, there was a lot of comments against, yeah, we know this family, you know, these guys have been corrupt and all that. And then there was like, well, you know, come on, what does it matter? You know, that was then, this is now, we should all lay it go to rest. And I made a comment, I said, are you crazy? You know, corruption never goes away. And if you sit there and hide your head in the sand, well, you're basically and allowing it to grow and to get more powerful and stronger. So somebody, the friend of one of their daughters, said, you know, how hurtful I was, and I shouldn't do this. And I was like, wait a minute, these guys slandered my father during his mayor, when he ran, and then when he was mayor, they told lies about him. They told my mother they were going to bring me down, and my sister, they were going to do everything they could to ruin my father's reputation. My father has been here. My grandfather was here. The people love him. And after three recalls, they couldn't get him removed because the people knew that my father's interests were for the best of Douglas. And he's an honest man, and they just drug us through the mud. So I'm like, you know, I am not going to sit here and say it never happened. I'm not going to say that these people didn't blackball me. And I don't care if they come and they're outside my apartment ready to burn me in the state, because I believe at the end of the day, to be honest, wins. And it's not an easy fight. It's not a popular fight. People don't want to stand by your side when you're fighting corruption. You end up doing it a lot on your own. But you know what? I go to sleep at night. Maybe these guys don't have conscience. Maybe, you know, Michael Brown and all these guys. You wonder, how can they go to sleep when they steal money from the Little League? Like you were saying,
well,
you know?
Yeah, you know, I think that's part of the fact that local corruption is so rampant is that really people put it on a personal level. These are people that you go to church with. These are people that you see at the guy that stole the money from the Little League. His son and my son played Little League together. And we saw them at all the Little League games. And, you know, and you tend to think, you want to think the best of people. So you say, oh, you know, maybe he didn't know the thing was on his land. Or maybe he did think it was a loan. Because it's easier for you to accept. It's exactly what Serpico was saying. It takes something out of us to admit that this is going on. You know, it's like my favorite subject, and you know, you and I have talked about this before, are term limits.
Right.
Well, that's a concept I've never been able to understand, because every congressman has a 2-year term limit. Every senator has a 6-year term limit. Every governor has a 4-year term limit. If they're not doing a good job, vote them out. But we don't do that. Because it takes an effort on our part, and we have to think about these things, which are tough to think about. So what we say is, well, you can't be a congressman for more than so many terms. You know, in Virginia, you can only be governor one term. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
You and I have a friend named Mark Warner, who we both worked with, who was so loved as governor of Virginia that he would have easily been reelected, but he was term limited out because he could only serve one term. Now he's a senator from Virginia.
Right.
But it's crazy that you allow somebody to do one term. What if you were a brain surgeon or a lawyer and you said, well, you can be a brain surgeon for 4 years, but after that, we're getting a new brain surgeon because we don't want to.
I want to say too that you and I think both that Mark Warner is a very honest guy. I mean, we worked with him when he was living out of his car, remember?
Right.
He always looked like kind of like disheveled, and everyone kind of joked about him. And then, you know, when this was during Carter, when he was president, and then when we lost, remember, everyone was like, oh, Mark's going to be selling phones door to door. And what was he doing? He was selling Nextel. I mean, he became the owner of Nextel. He was one of the first big cell phone companies. So
he sold his interest for $100 million. So I don't think he's living out of his car anymore, Kathleen.
I don't think so. No, but I mean, he was a good guy. And we know people that we worked with that are very high in politics that, boy, we know things. I know things that I would just really question the morality because of some of the things they did when they were 24 or 25. You know, I think what you lower yourself to do when you're young, it doesn't mean you're going to – sometimes you change, but just kind of shows the path in which you're taking. So
– yeah, and what does that say about you and me? You and me, we don't have any money, but we're still friends. The guy with $100 million, we don't talk to him anymore.
That's right.
But no, you're absolutely – we do.
He talks to us, but
– he does. And he's a good guy, and he always was a good guy. And again, there are plenty of good people in politics, and we need to promote them, and we need to say to the bad guys, no. You know, somebody asked me from the Washington Post when – then this was before Michael Brown, when the other corruption was going on, if I could do one thing – what would I do to stop the corruption? And I said, well, the first thing I do was I put a sign over City Hall that says, it's not your money.
Right. Right.
That's not your money. That's somebody else's right. money. And very often they don't understand that. And, you know, it's played fast and loose. And it really is, you know, it really is less it's just as insidious, but it's more casual than people often think. You know, most of the people that I know that have given money to these guys and that have helped them subvert the system, I see them at political functions all the time and at cocktail parties and other things. And they're nice people who are you know, from their perspective, making smart business decisions by giving contributions to people. And on the politician's end, they're like, well, I give him business because he's a good guy and he does a good job. Well, we as citizens need to put ourselves in that process and say, you know what? It's got to be objective. If it's not objective, it's probably corrupt.
Exactly. And you know, we've talked about this fact that when people lament about, like I said before, about D.C. and corrupt politicians, the thing is, just look to your local city council. We grow these people on a local level and then eventually sometimes send them on to state and then on to federal positions. We need to get involved, and I'd like to talk about what I think is a big issue about the voting stuff going on when we come back. And we hope that somebody will call us and tell us what they think.
Well, we have a call.
We do?
Yeah, we have Tabu from Washington on line one.
Okay.
Can we get him on the line? Hey, Tabu, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, how are you? Thanks for calling
in. I could be better.
Yeah.
But thanks to the encouraging information that I'm hearing from your host, I guess I'm a little more encouraged. But I'd like to first thank you, Senator Brown, for your work. And I could like to say, I would say, if you don't mind my using the term, a slave. For a person to work in society now and not get paid for their work,
yes.
What more slavery can that be?
Yeah.
You know, so
what do you want to talk about, Tabu? You want to talk about statehood? You want to what issues are important to you right now in
the
city?
Well, right now, there were several of them, but if I may talk a little about what you all were talking about
yes.
I would call it the culture of corruption.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. My question would be, when did it start? You know, if we want to stop it, let's look at how it began. Because, you know, I tend to believe we are biological beings. You know, we become adapt. We become a product of what we're of our environment, more or less. So
mm-hmm.
Has this not been, when did this start? Because if we want to stop it, let's look at how it started. If you could talk a little bit about how it started, you know, I like to say the lingering negative effect of slavery. Anytime you're going to treat one group of your citizens one way and people don't say nothing about it, just a matter of time, it's going to come back to you. You know, so if you can tell me, was the system, was our government ever structured the way it was supposed to have been, or has it gotten worse, or is it better, or is it the same?
I think, sir, and you know, it's funny because I was doing some research on this and looking at quotes on corruption. Andrew Jackson had a quote about how bothered he was that the new system of democracy that was being put in place, he was already seeing corruption taking place by congressional members. And I think you're right. I think that it is a human it's in our human DNA, you know, to want to have the easy way out or to be able to be favored. And it takes something within us greater than that greed to be able to fight the corruption. Like Serpico, when he took on the New York City police force, he was one single guy that said, hey, I'm going to go through hell. My family's going to go through hell. It's going to be really, really a hard thing to do, but my dignity is worth the pain I'm going to endure. And I think that's what we are trying to say to people in America, you know, you have to, it's not an easy thing to do. It's much easier to look the other way and let these guys be corrupt. It's a lot harder to go and stand in line or go volunteer for a guy that you know is honest and you want to put in power. It's much easier for us to come home, have dinner, have a beer, turn on TV and relax and not be bothered by what's happening in the world. So I was also saw several quotes from Plato, who was saying that mankind will never really see an end to trouble until lovers of wisdom come to hold political power or the holders of power become lovers of wisdom. So I guess I would say that it's something that we're going to have to struggle with from probably since the beginning of time where democracy was born.
Well, and it's true, as you say, Tabu, that it's endemic to our system to a certain degree. You know, we read the beautiful words of Thomas Jefferson, who said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Now, we know that Jefferson was a slave owner. So we have this great ability in our rhetoric to talk out of both sides of our mouth. You know, how can we all be created equal if some of us are slaves? And from the very beginning of time, in especially in our democracy, there's always been that dichotomy. You know, I know that you know this man, Tabu, Dick Gregory, and I know him, and he said that America has always had a slave. They've always had somebody that they had to pick on. It was African Americans. When he said this to me, actually, at a lecture when I was in college, he was talking about young people. He said young people were the new slaves. But democracy, because it's an adversarial system of government, it always pushes one group against the other. And that's how it works. And that's, like I said earlier, the good news and the bad news. That's its strength, but it's also its weakness. And until we are all equal, it'll be that way. I'm sorry.
If I may inject, I think I think you said something that is key. Article 4, Section 4 does not describe our government as a democracy. It describes it as a republic.
Public, right.
And I think that is a tremendous difference. Sure. Under, it's called a democracy because you can get away with what you're doing, what you just described, under democracy. Democracy, it's by the people with 51% of the people controlling, doing what they want. But under mm-hmm. Republican form of government, that 51% cannot injure the minority. And that's why we're not enforcing our laws as planned. As George Mason said, you know, he said when all people are born free. But see, then the slave masters came back and changed that. You see, so the intentions were well, you know. People don't like to look at George Mason, who Jefferson copied the Declaration of Independence from the Virginia Constitution that George Mason was had written. And he had it right. You know, if I'm correct, he never spoke to George Washington ever again for what he did. You know, mm-hmm. and we are looking up to George Washington, these people. I think we need to start calling what they were. They were slave masters. They were unpatriotic. And we should not praise them. We should call them what they really were. But as long as we praise these people, you know, I think that's what part of the major problem is.
Well, we have a little disagreement here because I think we're all a mix of good and bad. And in that vein, Dick Gregory also said, in this lecture that I heard him give, that we take on, and you probably know this is true, Ted, but we take on the persona of slaves when we're treated like slaves. And we tend to see ourselves in the same light that others see us. And that's a problem. But, you know, Washington and Jefferson and Madison and all those guys were, you know, they were a product of their time. And certainly, you know, they were sending out a mixed message. And I think you make some excellent points. And until we evolve as a society, I don't think the corruption will go away because I think that we encourage
it. Well, am I wrong about saying that this is a Republican form of government? And do you agree with that?
Oh, no, it is a Republican form of government, right.
And,
a democracy would
be
wherever. Republican form of government is the type of government where you're represented as opposed to directly representing yourself in a democracy.
Tabu,
so we are Republicans.
I'd like to ask you a question. How do you feel as, I guess you live in D.C.?
Yes, I do.
Okay. What do you feel about these guys, you know, your mayor and the city councilman who now are being charged with this corruption? I mean, you know, D.C.'s always had, I lived there for quite a while too, it's always kind of tend to elect these guys that everyone kind of knows is corrupt, but yet, you know, it's the ones they know they're familiar with. I mean, what is your feelings about it?
Well, you know, I'm glad they're getting the corrupt ones, but the problem I have is they aren't getting the other corrupt ones. Why are you singling certain ones out and getting them? Now, that's the problem I have.
Yeah. Well, we're trying to get to the root of getting them all. But and we'll see what happens.
Well,
and
here again, if I will, you know, I will inject some of what I would call, you know, as we always say, well, I like to say anyway sometimes, well, black politicians, what we call black person, you know, the skin just had to be darker than some others. You know, some seem to get away with, you know, what we call in society is white. So many of them sometimes can get away with certain things, but when certain blacks go in, they will get them out and the others get away. But I actually need to get all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, corrupt is corruption.
Right? That's right. It is.
And corruption knows no color.
That's right.
Yeah, but see, what there seems to be, now I think we all know that certain people have done certain things, they're still in office. The question is why are they still there?
Exactly.
Well, the answer to that is because we send them back, and we shouldn't. Well, Taboo, thanks so much for calling in. We're going to take a short break now.
Could I come back and say something real briefly about a subject that's very close to me right now about city council?
Yeah. Would you stay on the line for a couple minutes while we play a special song for Father's Day?
I'll hold on.
And then we'll come back to you, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a short break and play a special song from Mike and the Mechanics for Father's Day. Here is In the Living Years. Okay, and we're back. So that was a song about regrets, about not talking to your father. So let's make sure that everybody on this Father's Day gives their dad a big hug or remembers their dad for a moment because dads are important. We're back, and I think we have Taboo still with us. Did you want to say one more thing before we move on, Taboo?
Yeah, I really did. There's an issue before us right now, and I think you all, if I can say, really touched on the answer to much of the problem. He says the people's fault. You know, we accept this. And there's an issue that I'm really concerned about right now is the fact that certain people who come into the country illegally, who are being exploited, and I think it's really, we need to look at our values as a society, you know, and abusing people to get them to come here. Now you want to give driver's license to illegal people so they can get the truck driving job and everything, undercut everybody else. Going to be here. And it's a form of indentured servitude, modern-day slavery. And that says, I mean, that's really, it's kind of rough. You know, the economy needs to grow. In order for it to grow, people need to have money to spend. And the businessmen, I mean, come on, the greed. I mean, if you don't pay people, how are you going to buy your products? You know, so that's what I really want to say is this illegal immigration situation has really, I think, shown our true values, how we will continue to exploit people. And I just wanted you all's opinion on that.
Well, you know, it's funny that...
Go ahead, Michael.
Taboo. I think that's an interesting point, and we wanted to move on to immigration policy. It's the big issue right now. The thing that Taboo is describing for those of you who may not know, is that in the District of Columbia, as it is in some other states, we've talked about issuing driver's licenses to illegal immigrants so that they – or undocumented aliens is a more a better way to put it, so that they can drive because they see it as a safety thing, and we get to know who they are and where they are, and they have to be able to qualify to drive. But you know, immigration policy is just all over the place right now, and it's funny that Mayor Bloomberg of New York gave a speech today at Stanford University. I guess it was actually yesterday on immigration. He brought in immigration. He said 30% of Stanford's graduates, now this is one of the finest universities in the world, Stanford, attend school on student visas, and we pay to educate them because the government supports our universities, and then we send them back. And that's silly. That's kind of the other end of what Taboo is talking about. Bloomberg said that every student who studied science, technology, math, or engineering should have a green card stapled to their diploma. It just makes economic sense. So there's both ends of that spectrum people are coming into the country, and people like Taboo feel that they're taking jobs away. I'm not sure that I agree with that. I think we've proven in agriculture and other areas that people are immigrants are essential to the economic system. We've always been a country of immigrants, but I understand that sentiment. And Bloomberg seems to think that we need to be more proactive and keeping the most productive ones here. Is there something you want to say?
Yeah, you know, I understand where he's coming from, because we are not, as a country, growing our own in the math and science world. I mean, last weekend when I found out that math is not required in the Arizona school system, I mean, you don't have to have math to graduate. It's not a requirement, which is just, it blows my mind, because your brother, who spoke to us last week, who was president of a college, said that math is the one thing that breaks the students when they do go to college. So, you know, I could see that it does make sense to keep these kids who are, you know, who come over here and get that kind of degree to help us, because we're going to have a big vacuum. And the immigration thing is, you know, it's a very, very tough issue. I know, sitting here on the Mexican border, I see people that come over here and work at Walmart, do not speak English, at McDonald's, at Walmart, and live across the line in AP. I kind of find that amazing, because let me tell you, it would be impossible for me to live over – well, maybe not. But for me to get a job in Mexico, I would have to know the I would have to know the language. Nobody in Mexico is going to speak to me in English. They're going to expect me to speak Spanish. Over here along the border, and I'm sure this is going to get a lot of people angry with me, we write everything now is in English and Spanish, you know, your ballot forms, everything. And you know, Gingrich, remember in the days, it said that English should be the main language, and that's what it should be. You know, when my grandmother, when they came over here to the United States, they learned English. English, she wanted to speak English. She didn't want me to speak Spanish. She wanted me to be an American citizen. And she felt that I had a better life here. But I'm amazed to see how the lines have blurred. And so you have people who have done it the correct way. You know, I know people here in Douglas who took 14 years, did it the right way, the legal way.
Right.
And then they turn around, and now they see all these people are going to have amnesty. And they're wondering, wait a minute, how is that right? I know people that use our system and live in Mexico. And they're kind of very proud of the fact that they get one over the United States. Now, I also feel that kids that are born here in the United States from parents who are, say, Mexican citizens, who go to school, who go into the service, probably are more patriotic and have more of a commitment to our country than our children do, Mike. You know?
Well, I think people take things for granted, and I think you're right. I was raised in part by my Italian grandparents, and nobody in my family speaks Italian, because my grandmother absolutely prohibited anybody speaking it in the house. It's funny, my grandfather, who was not a particularly well-educated person, spoke four languages, and the only one that he never really got the hang of was English, and my grandmother wouldn't talk to him. If he spoke Italian or Spanish or French, she wouldn't talk to him. She'd say, I don't understand you. I'm an American. Speak English. And, right. And you know, there was a thing about wanting to assimilate, wanting to be part of the culture. And that's a tough, it's a tough thing. I don't know what to say about that because there's a lot of good things about preserving your culture. And it's, there's a lot of good, you know, our greatest strength as a country, I think, is that we've been a melting pot and that we've managed to get all these different cultures and bring them together and move them together in a particular direction. But I agree that there is something about being American that seems to have been lost over the last several years, you know, the last generation or two. And I'm not sure how we get that back, but I think we do need to get it back. And you know what? With all the bumps and bruises, I got to tell you, I've never heard an American stand up and say, I'm sorry that I'm American. I'm sorry that I was born here. I'm sorry. We all understand what a great country this is and what great advantages we've all gotten from being here. So I hope there's a way we can regenerate that feeling.
Well, you know, I used to always say that I had the best of both worlds because I lived or grew up on the Mexican border. So I had the love of the music, the culture of Mexico, and I think the benefits of a legal system or let's say a democracy that had so many checks and balances. Because, you know, you go over to Mexico, so you get into trouble. You know, I can't tell you how many times we would go and raise money to give to the cartel over there to get our friends out of jail, and it was a matter of how much money you had to bribe them, and, you know, it was a totally different system. Now, you know, that I think is what our grandparents saw, because they came from countries that could be very cruel to the people who were in poverty of lower class, and they really did come here and they succeeded, and they wanted their children and grandchildren to be Americans, not Italians, not Mexicans, but Americans.
That's right.
And it was through this system that gave them that ability to become what their success that they got to. So it is a very tough situation when I'm going to McDonald's and I speak Spanish. And when I go to Mexico, I do not expect anyone in Mexico to speak to me in English. And I am very proud of my Mexican background. I know that if you say anything now that's even somewhat critical, you know, I've been called a racist. I don't know how anyone can call me that because I have always embraced my Mexican culture, and you know that. I always brought it back with me.
Yeah.
But it is hard for me to go to Walmart and have someone look at me, you know, hablo inglés. And I'm like, but you're over here in Walmart making money, and I know you live in Mexico. I mean, I have a hard time with that. I have a hard time with the fact that I go to McDonald's, and they're going to talk to me in Spanish, and they do not have a problem with it. They don't see that is wrong, that they should be learning English. And I know that that's part of some of the immigration policies that are being debated. And we have to talk, and maybe that's what we should start looking at our next couple of shows.
Well, we should. And, you know, I think that's the great challenge, is how do you preserve that, all those positive things you talked about the culture. If you want to take Mexicans, for example, the music, the art, the, you know, their love of life and, you know, all the positive things that you can say about Mexican Americans. How do you preserve that but still integrate it into a system where we're all Americans? Just to make taboo feel a little better about what's going on economically in America, I'd like to point out that the housing prices in May were the highest they've been in years. The housing market's recovering. The stock market has hit several all-time highs. Unemployment is stabilizing. So our economy's getting better, and maybe there won't be such a feeling at the lower levels of the economy that people are taking jobs away by coming into this country. But those are concerns. They're real concerns, and we need to address them. Unfortunately, we're running out of time here. We're almost off the air, so let me sign off and ask you to come back next week, and when we'll continue our discussion, maybe we'll have a guest, or maybe we'll just keep talking, because this is what we want to do, right, Kathleen? We want to start a conversation.
We want to start a conversation. You know, Michael and I have gone through the trenches together. He is fighting for a just cause for statehood in D.C., which people should know about, and everyone should be horrified that you guys are still a colony. And the issues that I see here in rural America, which can be very different in their interpretation of what it means and what it is back in D.C. So we need to hear from you all out there in the audience to let us know what you think, if we're crazy, if you think we're right, if you have something you want to add. I mean, it all helps us become, I think, better Americans when we have a discussion in which we all respect each other and try to see how we can fix these problems.
Well, and, you know, that's why we started this show. We really started it you know, I originally thought Kathleen had a lot of money, so that's why I asked her on the show. But no, and seriously, we started the show because we wanted to start a dialogue. And I wanted to start it with Kathleen, not only because I know her and I know what kind of person she is, but also because she lives in rural Arizona. And I think that's part of our problem, is that people that live in urban areas and people that live where Kathleen lives and people in different regions of the country have become separated, and we need to bring people back together. We see that. We talk in those terms now, right, Kathleen, politically.
Yes.
We got red states. We got blue states. We got states that matter and states that don't. I mean, there are people that want to reform the primary system just because they say, hey, look, if you're not in one of those battleground states, you never see a candidate. You never hear what the candidates have to say. You only get to hear them if you're in one of those battleground states. So, so the whole purpose of this enterprise is twofold. One, to get the word out about the people in the District of Columbia, because we need to be equal American citizens. And the other is to try to start a dialogue with America to bring America together so that we can start a conversation that moves us forward instead of keeps us in this gridlock that seems to be going on Capitol Hill these days.
I agree with you. I think politics has become more concerned on right and left than on what is right and what is wrong. And that's what we want to get back to. What is the things that are right in our system and what are the things that are wrong? And, you know, I think each generation has to wonder, you know, what did you do for democracy to enrich it? I mean, did you drop the ball? Did you become complacent? Did you close your eyes to corruption? And if so, what are you going to do about it? And that's what this show is about. What are we going to do about to fix what we think is wrong in this great country so that we can all become one again instead of worrying about the government knocking down our door and taking our guns. I mean, one of the reasons we got into this is that you and I had some big debates on gun control.
Yep.
And I was telling you how it was viewed out here, and you were like, what? What's gone wrong with you, Kathleen? What the hell? You know, what have you become? And I was just saying, this is how they view it here. And that's when we realized that, wow, we got to have this kind of discussion.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we're given a great opportunity here. It's funny that you should say, what have we done as a generation? You know, our fathers, we all know that it's Father's Day today. Tom Brokaw wrote a great book a few years back about how our fathers had saved the world for democracy. That was their contribution to our democracy, was they saved the world from fascism. So what are we going to do as a generation? I think you have a great opportunity here to make America, to really fulfill the promise of democracy for all Americans. And that could be our contributions. I say it all the time with D.C. statehood, for example. I say once we make D.C. a state, it will never go back to being unequal. We can change the future forever, and there are so many issues that we can do that with, and we hope that starting this dialogue with America will bring people in so that we can start a conversation that will change the country, and that will be our contribution, we hope.
Yeah, we hope so, because one thing that we've noticed is that we become very polarized, and I think people with all this technology, it's so easy to sit in your room and watch TV and be on Facebook and your kids are playing games instead of talking about, what do you believe America is and what do you want when you grow older? What do our kids want? What do we want to leave behind for them? And we don't want to lecture to people, but Senator Brown, and I think it was great that Taboo said to you, you do work for nothing. And I don't know if people understand it, that as somebody who has Senate privilege, like you get a nice little driver's license, you get that license plate that lets you park certain places, right? You can go and act like a senator, but you don't get paid anything. So you are, in a sense, a slave. And I don't know anybody who would work as hard as you do and spend a lot of his own money. That I found out you're not rich either, so that was a big disappointment.
Yeah.
I know you're
not rich. So what the hell am I going to do?
I know, both of us. What the heck are we going to do?
Right.
Well, we hope that people enjoy listening to us talk and that they'll tell their neighbors to listen to us and maybe call in and maybe we can grow and we can do this for a living would be nice.
And then when Kathleen and I are on a great somewhere – together, you can walk by and say, I knew these guys when they were on the radio.
That's right.
Thanks for listening. Please come back next week and listen again, because America's talking and we're listening and we want to start a conversation.
Thank you, America.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.